Yes, good morning. Grab a cup, grab a seat, and welcome on in to Coffee and Cornbread. It's Monday. You don't have to be great today. You just have to be slightly more productive than the version of yourself you wanted to hit snooze four times before turning on this podcast. Small wins, they count. Make your bed, drink some water. Don't reply all to an email today. Let's have a week. That's exactly where we're going to start. And welcome on into this very first edition of Coffee and Cornbread. What we plan to do on this show is we want to take you around the barn, what you might have missed over the weekend, and just give you some clips. So maybe you can go back, check them out, and then prepare you for what's coming the rest of the way. We're going to do that on today's show and every single day throughout the weekdays right here, every morning, bright and early on Coffee and Cornbread. So let's start there, because sometimes the best conversations don't start with a hot take. They actually start with a simple question. That's exactly what happened on Friday's Village Vice Live Dive. Brad Law, Brad, asked everyone to go back 10 years and compare where Auburn stood versus the program where they stand today. It's a tougher question than you might think. Let's check it out.
And let's talk about the three programs that, you know, typically bring in the most revenue and highest TV ratings. And so let's talk football, men's basketball, baseball. Are we better off now than we were 10 years ago in those three sports? That's the topic for discussion here for the next few minutes. Would love, obviously, to get your guys' comments on this. Football was coming off of 2015. That was a Birmingham Bowl season. We did not know who the quarterback was going to be. Is it going to be Sean White? Is it going to be Jeremy Johnson? Is it going to be John Franklin III? We weren't sure. Gus had just had his first, like, dip, his first subpar season.
Right.
So there were questions. And, like, man, if we missed on quarterback so much last year, what does this year look like? So now you look at that compared to this year. First year head coach, huge success as an offensive coordinator and as in one stint as a head coach at a level lower.
Very similar.
But you know, like, you know who the quarterback is, but you've not seen him at this level. So is football in a better position? Roster stability, future, energy, momentum, alignment, all that. Is football better now than it was 10 years ago?
See, I think Brad framed this perfectly because there really isn't an easy answer. If you're looking in the rearview mirror, Auburn has played for national championships just a couple of years earlier, and there was still a belief that one or two pieces could get this Tiger team back in contention. I believe that. I think they're in the right direction right now. Today, though, you're talking about something different. You're talking about potential. There's no doubt. Alex Golish hasn't played or coached in a single game yet as the Auburn head coach. But there's a lot of momentum heading in that way to establish that new identity. Ultimately, though, none of us know the answer until the games are played, until that first snap against Baylor is played. But if Alex Golish delivers on what Auburn believes he can, there's a real chance we look back a few years from now and say this was the beginning of something much bigger. Speaking much bigger, Charlie Five, our favorite Barner right there, C5, good old Kyle Rush. He wasn't fired up because Byron Brown was ranked 8th. No, he was fired up because nobody seems to agree on what actually is a ranking. Yeah, Byron Brown ranked 8th among SEC quarterbacks. Is it the best quarterback or is it the quarterback on the best team? On this week's Top Button podcast on Friday, Kyle Rush broke down why these two are completely different conversations.
Here's my thing about quarterbacks. To me, you have to specify what you're – to me, to rank a quarterback, you have to specify what the criteria is. And it feels like to me a lot of this is based off of team. It really does. It feels like a lot of this is projecting which quarterback is going to be on the team that's going to finish the best, potentially. And that's where I feel like it's kind of a cop-out. To me, the best quarterback is I can take this quarterback and it doesn't necessarily have to be the best talent around him and this quarterback is going to still be successful. I can put this quarterback on any team. I think there's a few guys on this list that you could argue are in the right spot that could be that way. And then there's some that I think just totally ride the coattails of the team they're on and the talent that's surrounding them.
Welcome back. Hey, I think Kyle's in the right question here because this debate isn't really about Byron Brown. It's about the criteria. If you're ranking who has the best chance to win the SEC, then sure, maybe, you know, team strength, coaching, supporting cast, all that matters. I agree with that 100%. But if you're ranking the best quarterback, I think you have to isolate those players as much as possible. And there is no way if you do that, Byron Brown is sitting as low as eighth. The non-conference schedule is starting to come to focus when it comes to Stephen Pearl's team on the men's basketball side, which means it's finally time to start talking expectations. What? Middle of July expectations? That's right. On the Barnes Hoop Show, Jacob Hillman broke down what realistic start to the season could look like and why last year's schedule provides some important context.
I think every home game, other than Arizona, you should win. And being at home against Arizona is going to give you a chance to win that game as well. If I'm looking at games that I think, okay, that's going to be a tricky one. So let's say Auburn loses to Arizona. All right. Then I'm going to say that Auburn also loses one in Vegas and loses at Clemson. So three losses in the non-conference. That's about right if this team is going to finish, let's say, eighth, maybe seventh in the SEC, right in the middle of the pack. I think that's a fair evaluation because you go back to last year, Auburn lost to Houston, Auburn lost to Michigan, Auburn lost to Arizona, Auburn lost to Purdue. Like I said, all those teams were some of the best in the nation and had cases at being the number one team in the country. In the midst of all of that, Auburn also did beat St. John's, the Big East champions, and then an NC State team that was in the first four in the NCAA tournament a year ago. So it wasn't all bad during the non-conference schedule last year.
Expectations have to be grounded in reality. Last year's non-conference schedule is one of the toughest in the country, and Auburn took its lumps against some of the elite teams. There's no doubt about that. We saw Stephen Pearl fighting for the way that his resume looked heading into the NCAA tournament last year because of exactly that. This year's schedule still has challenges, but it feels much more manageable, especially the way he has acquired the talent and built the team this offseason. If Auburn protects its home floor, wins the games it's supposed to win, and steals one or two games against opponents, you know, quality opponents, I think they're going to head in a really good spot, especially with that tournament expanding. I think you'll see them back in the NCAA tournament without question. Well, one of my favorite things about member-only shows, that's right here on Coffee and Cornbread, we're giving you sneak peeks of member-only shows. Afternoon delight. Sometimes we get to slow down and have conversations that don't always fit in regular episodes or an episode that you hear over on the normal Barn YouTube channels. This one started with a simple question. How should you actually rank quarterbacks? Ben Taylor had the answer that I think a lot of people overlook.
When I look at it, though, Kyle, I'm looking almost strictly at numbers, and that is total yards, even total yards on the ground, as well as interceptions. Because if you're a guy that throws a ton of interceptions, I can't put you up there at the top of the league. Now, if you're throwing there's also a difference in interceptions, because if you're throwing interceptions that lead to good field position, that's one thing. If they're putting you in a situation where you throw a deep ball and they intercept the ball down the 5-yard line, they got to go 95 yards. I'm not really.
How many concerned. Of those are there though? I think you can just look at total interceptions and get a pretty good idea. I doubt there's like somebody's going to have 50% of their interceptions are going to be good interceptions. You know.
Well,
here's what I want to do.
Maybe that stat, like that 20 plus yard interception or whatever, because that's considered a deep ball. So, you know, they do that. But you can't, again, you can't look at it. So you're right. You just need to look at total interception. If they turn the ball over a lot,
period.
You know, and that goes for both interceptions and fumbles. If he's a quarterback that's a running quarterback, he's going to put the ball in the dirt a few times. That's not good either.
Hey, Ben's got a really good point here, because too often we try to overcomplicate quarterback evaluations. We want to factor in offensive line play, wide receivers, coaching, schedule strength. All those things absolutely matter. But when you're evaluating a team, not a quarterback, kind of goes back to the top button conversation in this one with Afternoon Delight as well. But when you're evaluating an individual quarterback, ball security has to be the first thing you look at. No doubt about that. At the end of the day, great quarterbacks create explosive plays. 3,000 yards passing, 1,000 yards rushing. Give you any kind of hint? I don't know. That's why Byron Brown's decision-making this season is going to just be as important as his athletic ability, in my opinion. If he protects the football while still making the explosive plays that we expect him to have, he's probably going to have the best season of his career. And yes, I said that, even though he's taking that jump up to SEC play. Well, on Saturday, it was another great win for Alex Golish on the recruiting trail as James Branch commits to the Auburn Tigers. Here's Zach's initial thoughts on the new player heading to the Plains.
The Auburn Tigers land the commitment from James Branch, very athletic player, very large player from St. Francis Academy, their newest pipeline that they've developed over the past few seasons. James Branch played receiver, made a position change to defensive back. I've been told DJ Durkin loves this kid. Came down to Auburn, Maryland, Virginia Tech. Certainly seemed like Maryland was the biggest threat to Auburn landing him. We actually saw Maryland experts putting in crystal ball predictions kind of down the wire there. And ultimately, he did pick the Auburn Tigers. Joins a pretty loaded defensive recruiting class. Don't know if his path to playing time is extremely clear, but excited to see what he brings to this roster. Once again, all I needed to hear was DJ Durkin loves this kid. Once again, that is all I needed to hear. He has earned every bit of, I think, Auburn fans' respect when it comes to evaluating talent, especially on the back end. So, James Branch, the newest member of Auburn's 2026 class.
Before we wrap this episode up, in case you missed Sunday night's Barncast Live, it was awesome. And I love when conversations go somewhere you might not be expecting them to go. We started talking about Auburn's latest commitment, then it turned into a deep dive on roster construction and managing every aspect from NIL to transfer portal, recruiting, you name it. Brad Law jumped on the Barncast. Yes, I know. Over-unders beware. Over-unders beware. And then Daryl Dapridge followed up with a great point that I think it's one of the best explanations on where Auburn's roster is headed under Alex Golish.
And just know it, you're not going to have fewer than like 7 or 8 or 9 people decide to transfer out with eligibility. So you've got some room. You don't know the exact number, but you know you're going to have room. Am I off on that,
guys? No, I agree with you 100%. We talked about that before we hit record. That was the comment that I made to Kyle, is you're going to have attrition every year. Now, that number could go anywhere from 12 to 18, depending on what your success rate is, what your results are. Do people want to jump ship because they want playing time? Do people want to jump ship because the team doesn't play, isn't very good? There's a variety of reasons people leave rosters. I think, Brad, your number's right on. Let's just say conservatively 14, 15, 16 guys leave. The difference this year or next year will be, instead of Auburn going just to fill spots on a roster in the transfer portal, they will have to go aggressively to get immediate impact guys. So it's not about building depth and filling spots. If you only have that many seniors and you only lose 14 guys, the 14 you get, better make sure they are going to get significant snaps. And I think you can do that. At the end of the day, it's a nice problem to have, because all the good schools, that's what they do. They have a pipeline of high school athletes come in that formulate this roster, and then they go cherry pick portal kids that will only help them. Remember when we used to get guys in the portal just to get bodies? Those days may be gone. And if you're looking at this scenario, then it's actually a good place to be in.
I think that's the biggest difference between a good program and a championship caliber program. You no longer live transfer portal cycle to transfer portal cycle. You're not scrambling every December trying to find enough players to fuel the competition. And you're not living in retention mode. If you want to hear more about what I mean by that, check out Sunday's Barncast Live with the gang for sure. So that's going to do it for this episode of Coffee and Cornbread. I hope you really enjoyed this. We're going to come back every single morning, bright and early, to take you through what you might have missed around the Barn YouTube channel or on audio. If you're listening in audio, I thank you so much. You are definitely, definitely valued without question. Here's my question before we leave. And you can drop a YouTube comment. You can hit me up on Twitter X at Christian S. Rao, or, wherever you find your local Barn member, you can leave it there. What's one thing about Auburn that you're more optimistic about today than you were a year ago. Yes, some of the episodes we talked about 10 years ago in the past, but the last couple of years have been certainly shaky. So while I leave you today, think about that. Ponder yourself back from last July, preparing for the Baylor game yet again, but with Hugh Freeze as the head coach, with Jackson Arnold as the quarterback, with your basketball team already finishing a Final Four appearance. But I'm asking you to be a little bit more aggressive here. How are you more optimistic now than you were then? I'd love to hear your thoughts. Let us know in the comments. And we might actually feature your answer on Friday's Fan Friday. Thanks for pulling up a chair. We'll do it again tomorrow right here on Coffee and Cornbread, War Eagle.